Chapter 21. Ben loaded what remaining ammunition he had. Aside from the half-used magazine in the rifle, he had one other magazine and his 9mm pistol with two full magazines. In all, he had about 40 rounds. He hoped that would be enough. But if he ran out, then he always had the knife for close-quarter combat. "You're sure this is what they're planning on doing?" Liz asked. Ben had told Liz everything about the plan. "It's what Allie heard over the radio," Ben said, "and it fits a pattern of what they've already done." It wasn't the answer Liz wanted, but she nodded. Just be careful, all right?" Ben kissed her and then hugged her tight. "I'll come home." "You better," Liz said. Ben didn't want to let go, but he knew the longer he lingered, the more time the enemy would have to blow up the dam. There was no time for second place here. If they failed, then everyone who was here would die. "If you hear the explosions, we'll get to the tower," Liz said. "I know the drill." The tower was one of the training buildings on the property. It allowed cadets to carry all of their equipment up the 10 flights in the blazing hot sun, so they could get a feel for what it was like to climb the high-rises when the elevators were out. It was a grueling process, and the trainers forced the cadets up and down until they collapsed, vomited, or gave up. Ben had vomited. Ben wasn't sure if the structure would hold against the rush of water that would come flooding down, but it at least would give everyone a chance. "Carl and Tony will stay behind and act as muscle in case you need it," Ben said, "just to be safe." "Right," Liz said. "I love you."
"I love you too."
The pair kissed one more time, and then Ben turned his attention to the boys, both of whom could barely keep their eyes open.
"I know you're tired, but you two remember to take care of yourselves, all right?" Ben said. "And listen to your mother."
"We will," Connor said, answering in the dutiful way an older brother should speak. Ben was glad Connor was a good brother. He tried to teach his boys the importance of their relationship, making sure they always made up even after they fought. Because brothers fighting was inevitable. Ben couldn't stop that from happening, but he could stop it before it escalated into something they couldn't repair. Like what happened with his brother.
"I love you," Ben said,
kissing each of them on top of the head.
"I love you so much,"
they replied with sleepy, "I love yous," and Ben stood, looking back to Marty and Jeff, who were performing the same ceremony with their own families. Ben didn't push them or tell them to hurry up, knowing that each of them was making a sacrifice for the rest of them. It wasn't a new idea to them, though. They risked their lives every time they clocked on for their shift. Every call they took could be their last, but they always answered because that was their job. Once they completed their goodbyes, Ben led Marty and Jeff out of the compound, their wives and children waving and screaming their goodbyes in a send-off. All of them savored the sounds of their family, which followed them far after they could no longer see the compound. Ben didn't turn back, though, after his final wave like the others, because he knew it was important for him to stay dedicated to his task. And that task was to protect his family from the harm waiting for them at the dam. Liz hated that her family was once again separated, but she was glad to have her boys, and for the company of the others at the compound. Liz knew she could trust these people, and in times of crisis, trust was a valuable currency. Liz caught up with each of the women, but most of them were still concerned about their husbands or the state of affairs of the country. Everyone was worried about what happened next.
"You don't think this is a terrorist attack, do you?" Allie asked.
"I don't know," Liz answered. "It seems too sophisticated for those types of organizations to pull off." Allie looked on as her son and daughter played with Tommy and Connor. The two sets of children were close in age and had become friends at school.
"How long do you think it'll take before the other wives start pointing fingers at me and whispering behind my back?"
"Oh, I'm sure they're doing that now," Liz said, trying to make light of the situation. Allie smirked, but it faded quickly.
"Lena looks like me."
Liz frowned.
"So she'll grow up to be a beautiful woman who has a good head on her shoulders. Last I checked, that wasn't a curse."
Allie crossed her arms and leaned back into the chair.
"She'll grow up to be a beautiful
Arab-looking woman.
She turned to Liz, arching her eyebrows. People can change, Allie, Liz said. It happens all the time. By the time she grows up, people will have moved on to other things. The world gets smarter every day.
I don't know it will get smart fast enough, Allie said. You don't know the number of glances I get every time I walk somewhere alone around here. And I've lived here for 10 years. 10 years. Strangers take one look at me and have the sudden urge to call the homeland tip line. I don't want that for my children.
Liz knew Allie wasn't exaggerating. While her parents were born in Iran, Allie grew up stateside after her parents fled the country.
She'd lived through 9/11, when tensions were high and threats were made against her family.
She'd seen Allie be pulled aside at the airport when the two families had gone on vacation together.
People aren't as good as you give them credit for, Liz, Allie said. You know, after the 9/11 attacks, people would drive by my parents' house and fire gunshots. It would break our windows. My father came within inches of one of those bullets. She held up her fingers to symbolize the short distance. That much, and I would have lost him.
I don't pretend that people are good, Liz said. You've seen the way Ben and I have prepped, hoping to provide our family with some sort of barrier against chaos. She scoffed. And look how that turned out.
Liz glanced back to the children playing on the tires, laughing, as they forgot about the precariousness of their situation.
In that moment, the kids weren't worried about what might happen to them. They weren't concerned with fires or gunshots or evil lurking in the shadows. They were simply content with playing with each other and having fun.
I miss being able to do that, Liz said, watching the kids play. Just turn off everything and play.
Allie grunted a noise that suggested she understood.
The older I get, the harder it is for me to tune out the noise of the world.
It does get pretty loud, Liz said. The pair sat there for a little while longer, and Liz glanced around, looking for Nancy, who she hadn't seen since Ben had left.
Can you watch the kids for a minute? Liz asked.
Sure.
Liz thanked Allie and then headed over to the barracks. The families had claimed all but one of them, and it was an empty pod where she found Nancy.
The girl lay on her side, her back to the door, curled up in a ball on one of the bare cots.
Liz knocked before she entered.
Mind if I come in? Liz asked.
Nancy didn't reply and remained completely still as Liz stepped into the small pod with its tiny square windows. It was hot inside, the lack of breeze making the air stuffy. Liz reached for one of the windows and opened it, allowing a breeze to enter.
How are you? Liz asked, knowing it was a loaded question, but unsure of what else she could say to the girl who had already been through so much loss in such a short amount of time.
Nancy maintained her silence and stillness, and Liz sat on the bed directly across from her, folding her hands in her lap.
She didn't know where to start.
Have you eaten anything? Liz asked.
There's food in the kitchen. I can make you something.
I'm fine,
Nancy said, her voice small and quiet, as it drifted up and vanished into the air.
Liz knew that wasn't true.
And the last thing the girl needed was to be alone.
We can go back for them, Nancy. After Ben returns, we can find your parents and give them a proper burial.
She tilted her head to the side, looking for any sign that she was listening, or any sign of a reaction.
It's important for you to have closure, Nancy, even if...
When I was back at the house, my mother left my father and me to save herself,
Nancy said, her back still turned to Liz. She blamed me for my father's death, and then when I tried to pull him out of harm's way on my own, I couldn't, and he told me to leave him to burn alive.
Nancy's words were hollow and robotic, and it caused Liz's arms to break out in goose flesh.
Nancy, I...
Liz swallowed, gathering spit in her mouth.
I'm so sorry.
Nancy finally sat up and turned around. The girl had no tears in her eyes, and there were no physical signs that she had been crying at all. Liz suspected the girl had no more tears left.
I am alone, Nancy said.
And no amount of closure is going to change that. Nancy turned back around and curled up into a ball, returning to the same position Liz had found her in. Liz didn't think there was anything to do for the girl except to give her space.
I'll come back and check on you in a little while, Liz said, but if you need anything, I'll be in the mess hall. Listed to leave, stopping at the door to look back at the young girl, who had experienced more loss in one day than someone twice her age could have gone through in their lifetime. But Liz never saw the knife tucked beneath Nancy's leg, as Nancy hadn't decided what she wanted to do with it.